Hello, and welcome to the Inside EVs podcast for October the 2nd, 2020. This is episode number 26. Today, we'll be talking about the Volvo XC40 Recharge beginning production, the electrics at the Beijing Motor Show, and the Polestar Precept production gets the green light. I'm Dominic Ioni, Inside EVs editor and Inside EVs forum moderator. Joining us today, we have Tom Malogny, longtime and multiple EV owner and Inside EVs editor. And we also have Kyle Connor from the Out of Spec Motoring and One Lap YouTube channels. And he also puts together the super awesome videos for the new Inside EVs YouTube channel. Go subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications. If you'll notice, if you're a regular watcher, you'll notice that Martin is not with us this week. He's on vacation. So we hope he's having a good time. Welcome, gentlemen of the panel and ladies and gentlemen of the audience. So yeah, what do we have charging up in our driveways this week? Kyle, I hear you have some pretty exciting vehicles.
Right. It's been a really good week here this week. Let's see. It started off with the Audi e-tron. I think I talked a little bit about it last show, but I was able to take it on a road trip since then. I went to Louisville, Kentucky, and then down to South Carolina. And overall, I had about 2,500 miles in the e-tron. And it was really cool. I wanted to test a few things with this. I wanted to see, are the public charging networks good enough to go places? And not just on major thoroughfares. This was not a, let me just take the one highway corridor from here to Louisville. That doesn't exist. It's you go on this little road, you go this way, it's zigzagging. And that was test number one. Test number two was, does the e-tron have enough range for a road trip? What's the charging curve like and all this? So the first thing is, every charger I arrived to worked, which was amazing. And I used a mix of Electrify America, which was my preferred charging, of course, because 150 kilowatt, they have the only stations really that are easily accessible in this route with the high power stations. I also used ChargePoint, I believe three times, and EVgo. So I used three of the major charging providers here on the East Coast, especially. All worked just fine. Of course, needed my own app to activate the charger. It's not, you know, plug and charge yet. We're still not there. It's not as easy as plugging into Tesla. But the networks were great. I will say it was quite difficult, even for me at times, to figure out where I should charge next to optimize the trip. It's a balance of, okay, how long do I charge at this station for what rates? So when my next station's a 50 kilowatt, you know, I make sure to pull in so I can take advantage of higher charging speeds. And yeah, it was just a lot of complicated stuff. Now, the Audi has a built-in trip planner, but it wasn't that great. Like, it's like, okay, you're going to stop at this AC charger for 4 hours. I'm like, I'm not going to do that.
It sees the chargers though, right?
It shows you the chargers? Most of them, but not all.
Okay.
And it even missed some Electrify America ones, which I was very confused about. So I don't know. Right. I didn't love how complicated it was to go plug share. Let me see the distance to this charger that's next. Again, I didn't do any planning. I just got in the car and I only looked at the next charger when I was sitting at the current one. So I really did this as a blind test purposefully. It's also how I mostly road trip a Tesla. The second, of course, that thing I mentioned that I wanted to talk about was the overall range of the e-tron.
Right.
And the range of the e-tron in our 70 mile per hour range test was 188 miles, I believe, which doesn't sound that great on paper. However, when I'll use my Model 3 as an example, because I think Tesla is really the gold standard for road tripping right now. When I go to supercharge that car, I try to pull out of superchargers with 50 or 60%, and then I stretch it about 120 miles at most to the next supercharger. And that's the fastest way to travel. And the reason is the Tesla tapers pretty hard above 40% off of your 150 kilowatt charging or 250 kilowatt charging at a version 3. The e-tron is able to hold 150 kilowatt charging all the way to 78%. And wow. Even at 100%, it's doing 57 kilowatts. So it's like you charge really up good. To 93, 95% each station. So my road trip range is actually greater than my Model 3 because it charges so fast for so long. And that was a huge thing. I was like, wow, overall range does matter. Certainly if you're going to be taking a day trip out to your in-laws or whatever and coming back or something like this. Right. But if you're just going on a, you know, charger hopping trip like I do, it really matters is what is your range after your charging session, after the car starts to taper. And it really proved that the e-tron is the king of that right now, which I was super impressed with. So e-tron trip was great. Awesome. Next thing we'll blow through really quick. I had the Porsche Taycan 4S. Really awesome car.
What's the sticker on that?
Actually, it wasn't bad. This one was spec'd tastefully. It wasn't crazy optioned, and it was 129, which really isn't bad for the quality of car and driving dynamics. And considering the rest of Porsche's lineup, very reasonably priced, I'd say. The 4S, I still believe, is the Taycan to buy, not the Taycan to go have fun with. That's the Turbo S. So
it's got more range than the Turbo S, right?
Yeah, but it's marginal, couple miles. I mean, it's really, I think the Turbo S is rated at 198 or 199 EPA, and the 4S is 203. So, I mean, it's the same battery pack. It's pretty much the same car.
Right.
Different inverter and motors. But the 4S, we did a 70 mile per hour range test, which will be coming out on our YouTube channel on Inside EV soon.
Yes.
And it was the longest range test I've ever done. I thought it was the longest range test we've ever done, but that's not true. Tom had done a Model 3 long range dual motor that went, I believe, about 10 miles farther than this car. But that's it, 10 miles from a long range on aero wheels to this 4S on 21s. This one had the big, inefficient wheels, 305 section rear tires. It was not set up for range, and it did 277 miles.
Right.
277.9.
Right? Yeah. This is what we've been saying about the Taycan for so long. You know, and I've had the opportunity to drive it a couple occasions, once in Europe, once in the U.S. I drove it from Atlanta down to Daytona, Florida. And I wasn't doing a range test because I was with the Porsche folks, and I wanted to have a little fun with the car too. But I estimated when I drove it then that car, and that was a turbo, not the Turbo S. I drove the Turbo S in Europe, but I estimated that at 70 miles an hour, I figured I could go about 260, 265, which now you've just proven that, you know, maybe even further. You know, I mean, the turbo does have, I don't know what wheels you had, but I'm assuming wheels and tire setup I had might be a little bit less aerodynamic. But other than that, it should have been spot on. And that's fantastic to see, Kyle. Great job with that.
Right. It was really cool. And this one had the worst setup for the wheel and tire combo because it had it was a $5,000 performance option, more or less. It did have all seasons, not the sticky mm-hmm. tires, but the 21-inch wheels versus mm-hmm. the little aeros. So we've been working with Porsche. Hopefully, we're able to get a 4S from them on the little aero wheels because I believe that car would do more than 300 miles in pretty good conditions with the right wheels. And it'll be interesting to see that. So that was that was great.
So, and this, you were driving in range mode, I guess? It has a range mode, right?
So there is a range mode. It lowers the car all the way down. It prioritizes front motor. So it's front wheel drive only, which is pretty interesting. So the two-speed transmission isn't really meant for range. It's meant for high acceleration at high speed. Mm-hmm. And so it just kind of turns all that off back there, and you run in front wheel drive the whole range test. It took like over 4 hours to do the test. I did not expect it to take that long. Because the plan yesterday was to go do a range test, run it down to zero, then charge it from zero to 100% like we do with every EV. We got 270 kilowatts into the car, which was amazing, and it held there for 10 minutes. It went from dead to 46% in 10 minutes. It went to 80% in exactly 22 minutes, which is what the Porsche website mm-hmm. states. Porsche is very accurate. And it actually was just a little bit faster than what the Porsche website says, of course.
It's like 120, 130 miles of range in 10 minutes.
Just about, yes. It's amazing how fast that car charges. It's the fastest charging session I've ever had because the Model 3 only does 250 kilowatts, so this was 270. So it was good to level up.
Well, the battery temperature must have been just right because the Porsche's charging setup is very specific to temperature. If you're just a couple degrees off, you'll still get a high charge rate, but you might have gotten 255 instead of 270. I know when we did the media drive, when we pulled into the charging station, we were down to zero. So we were the only, I was driving with Alex on autos, and he and I were the media team for that car. And we were the only ones that drove it down to zero and rolled into the charging station. And as soon as we plugged in, it wasn't doing 270. And we brought the Porsche engineer over and he's like, what's the temperature? And he looked up the temperature. He's like, you're 2 degrees Celsius too low. It's going to take a minute before it gets up to full. And he was right. As soon as the temperature got up, boom, it went up. So it's the Taycan. I mean, all EVs are, but I think the Taycan specifically is very, very dependent on optimum battery temperature to hit that peak rate of 270. The other thing I wanted to talk about was something that Kyle mentioned earlier about the e-tron with the charging curve. And that's something that we talk about here on Inside EVs, Kyle and I in particular, but it can't be understated how important the charging curve is. People always look at the EVs and to say, well, it's peak charging is only 125 kilowatts. And, you know, the next EV does 150. The 125 kilowatt charging car might charge faster than that next EV that can charge at 150 kilowatts. It depends on how quickly it gets up to the maximum charge rate and how long it holds it. Some EVs taper off very early and, you know, they hold their maximum charge rate for a couple of minutes. And then all of a sudden it's starting to ramp down. One of the things that Audi did so well was have that strong charging curve. Like it gets up to 150 kilowatts and it holds it, as Kyle said, up to almost 80%, the maximum charge rate. Then when you get over 80%, 90%, it's still charging at 50, 60 kilowatts. Very few, if not no EVs, hold such a high charge rate for so long. And that's part of the reason why Audi has such a big battery buffer, because it can take that full charge rate all the way up to 100%, not the full charge rate, but a very high charge rate, up to 100%, because there's still 15 kilowatt hours left in the battery pack. Or somewhere around there. I know Audi just opened up a little bit more of the battery pack as a usable capacity, whereas many other electric vehicles use either all the pack or very close to the pack. Those cars cannot take a high charge rate after 90% because the battery just simply, you'll have unbalanced cells. It'll create all kinds of problems. So that's one of the things we got to give Audi kudos for. I know they took a lot of heat with the range that, oh, it's an inefficient car. And, you know, there was a lot of talk about that early on. But Audi came out strong with their charging. And I don't think they got as much credit as they should have for that. The e-tron is a fantastic car charging wise. I mean, it's an all around great EV. I'm sure Kyle enjoyed his time with it. But it has really... The one thing, if you want to say, what does the Audi e-tron do best? It's charge.
Right. I hear it's a,
totally agree. The only downside to that charging curve. Oh, sorry, Dominic. I didn't hear you.
Okay. I was just going to say, mention that you mentioned to me that it has like really nice massaging seats, possibly. And
yes, I had the Prestige
thick,
one.
It was thick glass. Nice. So it's like super quiet too.
Right, so double pane glass and massaging seats, great backlighting, really good driver assistance. It was a fantastic road tripper. One of the best sound systems in the car. It's not the best, but I'd say a good 8 out of 10, which is high praise from me. Bang & Olufsen did a nice job on that system. The car was a great cruiser. But to Tom's point, charging curves really make a big difference here. But the downside to having that great charging curve, especially if it's doing 50 plus kilowatts at 100%, and we'll be sharing the full curve on Inside EV soon in a new series, but it means that there is still a buffer that is inaccessible at the top of the battery that you're not able to get into. Now, the Germans look at this probably and say, well, you won't have as much degradation, charge the car to 100%, you don't have to worry about it. I look at it as, well, can I just use the full battery, kill it, and then trade it in 3 years? So, you know, everyone has their own opinions on this. I'd say that charging curve certainly makes up for a lot, though. It was pretty great.
Yeah, so I'm curious. So the e-tron, you said it charges up, you know, keeps a high rate of charge, very high in the percentage. Does the Taycan mirror that? Because they're both from, they're both VW products, essentially, right?
Right. So the Taycan... has a little bit of a different curve because it's doing 270 kilowatts or so. This Taycan will rip 270 until about 50-ish percent. Okay. And then it will go to, it'll jump down pretty hard. And at 75%, I believe it's below 150 kilowatt. And then it just falls on its face. Anything above 90, it's doing 14, 15 kilowatts. And that's because there isn't as much of a big buffer on the Taycan. You can see here, if you're our YouTube audience, this is how we film our charging curves during the daytime through an Amazon box taped over the Electrify America screen. We also record in the car as well, so we can compare delivered power to what's actually going into the battery and measuring that loss between the two. And it was an awesome charging test for Taycan. 10 minutes yielded 45% or so, 46%, and it just sat at 270 kilowatts. We got the battery temperature exactly right. Like Tom was saying, this was definitely on our minds. We were monitoring the battery temp all the way through the range test. We knew it was going to be good, and it gave us a perfect zero. Like, the car wouldn't even move. It died, literally died in the street pulling into the charger. I had to return it back on to get a burst of power to get to the charger, all the way to 100%. It took just about an hour to go all the way up. But again, 80% was only 22 minutes.
So the full charge from empty to 100% took an hour?
Yeah, I think it was like 63 minutes. But to 80% was only 22.
Wow. So that's the big deal. So shows you how hard it takes. 20 minutes, that's really what you're looking at. And probably less than that, because you're not going to start at 0%. You're going to start at like 10% or something.
Yeah. Right, unless you're me or Tom, you start at close to zero. But most normal people won't do that.
Right. Yeah, if you're on a road trip, you're not staying much longer than 25 minutes at an Electrify America station in a Taycan. And unless you really need to squeeze out those last 20, 30 miles, you're just unplugging at like 80, 85% and going. So, I mean, it's, you know, you pull up, you plug in, you go inside, use the restroom, grab something to eat, come out, and that's it. You unplug and you leave. I mean, that's where we're at now, not just with the Taycan, with other EVs, with the state of charging. And now that we have these super high speed charging stations, you know, gone are the days where you're out there just leaning against your car for an hour and a half. It's plug in, walk inside, grab a cup of coffee, come out and unplug. And that's what's going to make the mainstream, you know, the mainstream car buyers interested in EVs. Because, you know, where we were with charging in the last decade, we just could never get mass adoption. We're still not there yet with the infrastructure, but now at least we know the cars and the stations are capable of doing this. Now we just need to fill in the holes.
Right on. All right.
Right. So before we go through, I'm sorry, there was one last point about Taycan I wanted to make. We sort of ran out of time because the car just didn't die. It did, again, 270 something miles. It took 4 hours and then another hour for the charging test. We were running out of daylight, but I had the opportunity to drive it around the track last night. It was my first time really thrashing a Taycan 4S. I've driven Turbo and Turbo S, of course, pretty hard. And the 4S was interesting because it wasn't as good on track, which I guess is to be expected. But I had it there at the nighttime. As you can see, if you're our YouTube audience, it was pitch black out. And so it was really fun. He also brought around a BMW M4. We did a little chasing around the track. But the biggest takeaway here was the 4S has these staggered tires, which the other ones do too, but narrower front tires and big junky rears. And so when you really throw it into a corner, it likes to understeer. They all do this. But with the Turbo and Turbo S, when you give it some throttle, it pushes the back end out. This, because it doesn't have all of that torque on the rear axle, tends to still push when you get on it. So the only way to drift a Taycan 4S is to really chuck it in with a little Scandinavian flick, which we did plenty of last night. You really just got to throw the weight in. Once it's sideways, it's full on rally car and will skid around. And that's probably important to Porsche owners. Back to the normal news.
I saw a little clip of that actually last night. You don't have one of those lined up there, do you?
Yeah, I could probably pull one up, actually. It's on our
I believe Instagram. It was on your Facebook story. I'm not sure if it was on it to the Out-of-Spec Motoring Twitter feed or not.
Right, I think it was on my personal Facebook story. Let me see if I can get this loaded up.
It was a pretty impressive send, I thought.
Right, exactly. I mean, the thing is, in Right. I have it pulled up here, actually. So let me share my screen over to this 1 second. And
Martin does all this behind the scenes technical.
Right. I'm still figuring it out. Okay. Here we go. So you can see full sideways.
Right. On the skid pad. Right around the circle. And slingshot back down the track. Wow.
Yes. Right.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
You have too much fun down there.
Yeah, man.
It's way too much.
I live way too far away. All right. So let's start with some news. Okay, we were going to go right to Sweden, but actually something out of Fremont this morning, or out of California, Tesla's Q3 numbers are in for 2020, their production deliveries. They, for the third quarter of 2020, they produced 145,036 cars, and they delivered 139,300. So I believe that's right up in there what people were estimating. I think some of the estimates might have went up as far as 140,000 or something. So we'll see what Wall Street thinks of that. You know, it's fine. They're making a lot of cars. I think that could be a record output too as well. Tom, do you have anything to say about that?
Well, to be honest with you, this came in so soon. I was already dialed into the podcast. I haven't read it yet, but from what I understand, it's pretty much in line with what people were expecting. Mm-hmm. There were some analysts expecting a little bit more, but you know, it just shows, you know, consistent growth. Tesla keeps putting up the numbers. You know, it's amazing what this company's doing. Everyone's impressed. There's a reason why the stock is through the roof. You know, they're doing it. They're doing something that really hasn't been done in a long time. And, you know, you got to give them credit for that.
Yeah. It seems like they're basically selling all the cars they can make the batteries for. And I believe China had a little bit of a price cut or something going on there. Maybe it was an incentive, but their least expensive vehicles are selling quite well. We had a piece on Inside EVs earlier this week about that.
So the stock hasn't, I don't think we've opened yet, or we may have just opened, but it looks like it's actually down after the news in pre-market trading.
Yeah, it was up quite a bit yesterday.
Interesting.
It popped pretty hard yesterday, the last couple of days, so it could be people taking profit or, you know, it's such a dynamic stock. It was down like really hard last week or earlier this week at some point, and now it's, you know, back up to battery day kind of took the wind out of its sails a bit. But now it's back up.
Right. It'll take people time to digest what battery day means. Yeah. Like I said, on battery day, we didn't see a Cybertruck come in with flames and a Roadster flying. People aren't going to understand it or like it. You got to relate to the normal people. And they did not do a good job of that during battery day.
Sure. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, but the analysts, the people that know the industry, people like Sandy Monroe came out of it saying like, this is unbelievable. This is fantastic. So while we get it that a good portion of the public kind of felt underwhelmed by battery day. The truth of the matter is what we saw there was really, really great news for the company. And it's only going to move Tesla forward. So, you know, I think as Kyle said, you know, the initial might've been a little confusion. Like, what did we just see there? Was this anything? The market's going to respond to that over time.
Yeah. I'm still digesting some of the battery day news. I'm clicking on videos, explainers, and just like, man, there's just so much buried in there. But anyway, let's get on to the rest of the news. Let's start with some news from Sweden, or should I say Belgium. That's because the Volvo XC40 Recharge P8 AWD all-wheel drive, to use its full name, has officially begun production in Ghent, Belgium. It's the first all-electric Volvo, and it is built on the same compact modular architecture, CMA, as the Polestar 2. It will also be built at a plant in China. It's a compact crossover that boasts about 249 miles of WLTP range from a 78 kilowatt hour battery pack with about 75 kilowatt hour usable. It's got plenty of pep. It goes from 0 to 60 in 4.7 seconds. It's said to fast charge 0 to 80% in 40 minutes, maxing out at 150 kilowatts. And it also has an 11 kilowatt onboard AC charger for pretty quick charging at home as well. And to top it off, it can tow 3,307 pounds or 1,500 kilograms. It should be in the $50,000 neighborhood. We don't have a price on this yet, but deliveries are supposed to start this year. And originally it was supposed to be on sale this year in the U.S., but the U.S. Volvo site still has it listed as a future model. So we'll see what's up with that. The original plan had called for it to be sold in California first, and then rolling out to the rest of the country shortly thereafter. I got to see this at its launch in Los Angeles last year, and I think it's pretty sweet. I know Kyle has things he wants to say about this car, but first let's hear from Tom. Tom, could this find a place in your heart, or if not your garage?
Absolutely. I really like this vehicle. And I've got even better news for you. The dealers really like it. Now, you know, one of the things I do here in New Jersey is I work with Plug in America on our Plugstar dealer certification program. We basically help dealers better understand and better sell electric cars. So I travel around, I visit dealers every day. I work with their sales staff, answer questions, get them certified as Plugstar dealers. And one of the things I've noticed is in the past years, dealers generally weren't excited about upcoming electric cars. They looked at them as they were more just going to be a problem. This is something else I have to learn. This is, you know, people are coming in and ask me these questions that we can't answer about batteries and so forth and so on. But the one thing that I've noticed, two manufacturers, Ford with the Mustang, Mach-E, and now Volvo dealers are, when I show up, are asking me, okay, so what's the latest news on this vehicle? We can't wait to get it. So that's really big news. As far as I'm concerned, it might not make everybody extremely happy, but I work with this every day. And I'm so used to having dealers be like, all right, what plug-in car are they going to send us next? Because we know dealers have issues with electric cars in many instances. But the Volvo dealers now are so into this vehicle. They really are here in New Jersey. They're disappointed. They were supposed to get it a little bit earlier. We were originally supposed to have it, I think in September-ish. And I don't know if it was COVID or whatever, but there was a delay that the vehicle's coming a little bit later than what it was. And now I'm hearing the dealers, they're asking me when I show up, do you have the latest news? When are we getting this car? Because we can't wait to sell it. So that's really important because, as we know, dealers have been an issue with electric cars. And part of that issue was if the salespeople weren't excited about the vehicle, if they didn't take interest in the vehicle, they kind of pushed it to the side and said, hey, you don't want that car. Let me show you these cars over here. They're much better. But when you have the dealership on board and the salespeople saying, this is a car we can sell, then I think sales are going to do well. I think Volvo is going to do well with this vehicle. If I was in the market, I would definitely be considering it. About the price, Dom, you had said about $50,000. I think it's going to be a little more. I think it's going to launch at about $55,000.
Okay.
And that makes a big difference here in New Jersey because we just started a new state rebate, which is capped at $55,000. So that's the only negative. The dealers are, you know, asking, is there any way we could, you know, well, what if we discount the car $2,500? It doesn't work. It goes by the MSRP. It doesn't go by the final sale price. So unfortunately, it looks like this vehicle isn't going to qualify for the New Jersey State $5,000 EV rebate, which is unfortunate. It would have really helped it. And some of its competitors that are just slightly less, like Model Y, if you don't load it up with too many options, the Ford Mustang Mach-E, the Volkswagen ID.4, all those vehicles are going to qualify for it, but this one isn't going to. So that's going to make it a little bit more difficult. But you know what? Volvo owners are super loyal. One of the most loyal brands. I think a lot of these cars are going to sell to people coming in, bringing their Volvos into a lease and saying, what's your latest and greatest? And they're going to put them in a plug-in Volvo.
Yeah. When I went to the event, I was really impressed by the Volvo. They picked us up in Volvos and took us back to the airport in Volvos. And I hadn't really spent a whole lot of time in them, except since I had a friend with an old 240 wagon from the 80s, you know, that's my Volvo experience. But, and this was like a worlds apart from that. You know, when I look at them or when inside it crawling around, I just think of the word crisp. It just feels like, I don't know, there's a sort of Scandinavian thing going on. So Kyle.
Yeah, well, you're absolutely right. They're premium, but they're not pretentious. They're beautiful cars. They're built extremely well. I've driven every single Volvo product that they are selling today, including the Polestar variations as well, and which technically aren't Volvos, but they're sort of Volvos. And they're great. So, you know, the thing that I love so much about these cars is I did a whole piece on the V60 plug-in hybrid Polestar engineered version, which was an amazing car, but there's a lot going on there. You have a four-cylinder internal combustion engine with a turbocharger and a supercharger. And oh, by the way, there's a battery pack with an electric motor on the rear wheel. So it's just a lot going on.
Right.
The thing that I love so much about that car was the power, the handling, everything was great. So now we are going to get an XC40 with the same, roughly the same power output. Very good handling, but not going to be as good as that Polestar V60. However, it's just going to be battery electric. So you don't have to worry about all this engine under stress and warm up and, oh, the engine's on. Oh, now it's off. Now we're running on battery. It's just going to be pure and silent, and it's going to be amazing. So we have pretty much decided on our side. Alyssa, my girlfriend, has fallen in love with this particular spec, this green, I forget the name of the color, but it's a cool green XC40. It's only available in the Recharge, and I'm very certain we're going to put our deposit down on one of these and be one of the first to take delivery. Again, we're waiting on final pricing as the final judgment here, but this will be the replacement for our BMW i3. Now, I've pretty much already driven the Recharge XC40. I've certainly sat in it at the CES show. But when I say that is I've driven the Polestar 2, which is the identical car underneath.
Wow. Underneath,
literally, yeah, no change. The only difference is the body. And I drove the Performance Pack Polestar 2 and the non-performance pack. The non-performance pack, I believe, is going to be very similar to this XC40. And it'll be very good. So very much looking forward to that and can't wait to see these on the streets. I'd say it's not an amazing electric car, but it is an amazing car that happens to be electric.
It's a great looking vehicle too, right? I mean, you had the picture up there. I think it's one of the most visually appealing, I guess, mid-size crossovers or mid-size SUVs. Is it in the compact class?
Yeah, I'm not sure what class it's in.
Yeah, but it's one of the nicest looking vehicles. You know, I know that's obviously subjective, but you know, I walk around it at the shows and just, this is just a beautiful vehicle. If we needed that type of a vehicle, it would definitely be very high on my list.
249 miles of WLTP range. What do you think that will be with the EPA?
225? Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah, Kyle? I think it's going to be less. I think we're looking at low 200s here, unfortunately. I don't think we're going to see anything too amazing. It is a great looking car though. Again, the range, we're not sure. Let's hope that they get the charging curve a little bit better than Polestar 2, because we just had a story this week. I believe Bjorn was doing a Polestar 2 test. It hits 150 kilowatt peak, but it loses it so fast. So right. Everything that we just praised the e-tron for doesn't have a lot of range, but it has that charging curve to make up for it. It does not at least appear at this time that the XC40 Recharge will have that same deep charging curve. Now, I've talked to the Polestar engineers about this, and again, they're using the same exact architecture as XC40, and they're being very conservative with their charging profiles. And these will get updated and opened up over time as they get data in from their fleet, and it will all happen over the air without a trip to the dealer necessary.
Right. So your range today could be, it's not maybe your range tomorrow, you could have an extra, 10, 20 miles.
They can certainly open up usable capacity of the battery pack,
right.
But what's probably more important is altering your charging curve. So your range after a charging session on a road trip could be greatly improved because, you know, our theory, and it's how we set the cannonball record, it's how we've been able to travel quickly, is to charge only when the car is pulling maximum rates. And then after that is charge just enough to get to the next station dead. And so, with a deep charging curve, it just gives you more optionality to go longer distances.
Right on. All right. Well, sticking with Swedish car manufacturers, we also learned this week that the Polestar Precept concept has been given the green light for production. Polestar is, of course, the all-electric brand of Volvo, and they're both owned by Geely out of China. The Precept was first was first revealed in February and was supposed to officially debut at the Geneva Auto Show. That was canceled, of course, and in lieu of that, the company released a few videos with Polestar CEO Thomas Ingelath enthusing over his design. He has a design background. He's a German fellow. But I share this enthusiasm. We have it up on the screen there if you're watching us on YouTube. But I wish there were more technical specs available. It's about the size of a Model S. I think it's a little bit bigger. So it could compete with that, or maybe even the Porsche Taycan. But it's hard to guess exactly how much performance it will have. It will apparently be built in China and feature lots of recycled materials. It supposedly is going to have a lightweight carbon composite construction. I don't know. Kyle, what do you think about this thing?
Well, look, Polestar isn't all about 100% performance. It's about taking a different path. It's what Volvo's done. It's why they're so successful. It's why I believe Polestar is going to be very successful. It's design driven first, yes, with really good tactile feedback while driving, but not all out. Let me, you know, wipe your face off and smash your body into the back of the seat, you know, ludicrous acceleration. That's not what they're so about. So they're taking their own path. This is the Swedish way of making a sports car. And it was very cool to see this car when Polestar and Koenigsegg got together. So Thomas and Christian von Koenigsegg did a little video together with brands, which was really fun. The Precept looks great. I have one huge issue with this car, though. And that is, what is on the roof? What is that thing? It's so Starlink? Weird.
Satellite? Like a Starlink?
I'm sure it's for driver assistance, but it's kind of like the Xpeng G3 has that selfie cam on the roof. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like that. And it almost ruins the entire car for me. If I had one, it would be the first thing I just rip off, no matter the function.
Well, don't forget, this is a concept car. The production car is going to look, I think, radically different. I doubt if it would have. This has the coach doors, right? Suicide doors.
Yeah, that'll be different.
You know, and that's going to change the whole look of the vehicle. I think that this will be interesting to watch. But I think the finished product is going to look a lot different than what we see there in the concept, and maybe it won't have the hat that Kyle doesn't like.
It kind of puts me in mind of the old Prelude, you know, but with sharper creases or something.
It's very sharp. The thing with Polestar is, though, basically, Thomas used to be the head of design at Volvo. So we're seeing a lot of this transfer over here. And I don't know. I think it's going to look very close to this. I think this is almost production. Look, they have everything from an FMVSS thing looking like it's figured out. They have the taillights in the right place. They have the headlights in the right place. It looks like the interior is really cool. It doesn't look concept-y. This looks totally like something they would actually make.
Look at the seats, man. Those look so good. Look at the side bolsters.
Very similar to Polestar 1 seats. They're very nice.
And when I see that interior, I see concept-y. So we're looking at it differently. Yeah.
I don't see that. It looks totally production to me. These are seats that they're able to make. They're already making seats that look just like this. And honestly, it looks like everything's figured out. They got volume knobs front and rear, I guess.
Do you think they'll use suicide doors?
No.
Coach doors, it's possible that they won't. It's possible that they will, but it has gold seat belts. What more do you need to know?
Oh, you got me there.
I say it's pretty much a safe bet to say that a car won't have the suicide doors that they show it in concept form. But usually they kind of do that so, you know, it shows that they can open up the whole thing and you can take in the whole interior at once. It's really, that's why they have suicide doors on concept vehicles, just so you can have a nice look at the interior of the car without, you know, that whole B pillar being in the way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, and we don't have any specs on this. So we don't know, you know, how it will perform or how it certainly looks like it will perform. It looks like a little handle. I mean, those front seats, those side bolsters, you know, those are made for going around turns. Yeah, it's so beautiful.
It definitely looks cool. You know, when I saw it, I saw some Porsche Taycan. I saw some Model S. I saw a little bit of the Xpeng P7 from the front. So it was, definitely a beautiful vehicle. I hope it stays true to that. I just, you know, to me, my first impression was that, you know, it's going to be a disappointment when we see the production version. I hope I'm wrong.
All right. Well, if you have an opinion on this car, or if you're planning on buying one, even, you can stop by the Inside EVs forum, and we have a section that already is set up there for Polestar. And you know, if we have enough people coming over, we'll put a little subsection for just for the precepts. We have one for the Polestar. Excuse me. We have one already for the Polestar too. And so, yeah, that's great. So let's take a little trip around the world. The Beijing Motor Show is underway. It's likely the biggest auto show so far this year. Of course, it's practically the only auto show this year. But anyway, they have a number of interesting electric vehicles making their debut, and I wanted to talk about some of them really quickly. We're not going to get too deep in the weeds here, but it's good to look at where the Chinese industry is right now with EVs and just vehicles in general. It wasn't so long ago that Chinese auto designs were something of a joke with a punchline about copycatting cars from other countries. Now, though, that's mostly left behind, and we're starting to see some interesting designs. Some are still a little over the top. Some might say garish, but I think this is a great time for Chinese design. I like the flamboyance that we can see in certain vehicles. So to kick this off, let's talk about a vehicle from an automaker we know a little bit about. The twist here is that this thing isn't even a car, really. It's a two-passenger flying car, and I mean that in the loosest sense. Tom, what can you tell us about the awesomely named XPeng KiwiGoGo?
Yeah, so to call it a car is a little bit of a stretch. It's kind of like a large, drone. Right. So, but you know, it's not unusual. This is very common in China now. A lot of the automakers there are working on these flying vehicles that they don't plan on using anytime soon. They look at them more as like a technology incubator, and also to keep an eye on the future, so that, you know, if things do shift quickly and all of a sudden, you know, air transport, you know, personal air transport does become more popular, they'll have already had a bunch of research in it and able to move on that. Now, XPeng started its own company, XPeng Motors, and the owner of XPeng together formed a new company. I forget the name of it. And that's the company that's developing this product. But and I reached out to XPeng when this was announced, and they, one of the things they wanted to be very clear was, they said, look, please make sure your readers understand there's no like shift in the company's plans. We are here to make cars. You know, we're not making this radical change, but we just wanted to show off some of our technology and also let people know that, look, we're a future-minded company. Where they are still a startup, XPeng. They've only been in business a few years. But they're already looking down the road, you know, down the runway at the in the future for, you know, whatever transportation modes are being developed and used at the time. So that's a cool vehicle. I'd love to take a spin in it. I'm so disappointed I'm not at the Beijing Auto Show now. I go there every year. I do a lot of the Chinese auto shows, and the Beijing Motor Show is perhaps my favorite, and it's so disappointing that I can't be there this year and seeing all these cool things going on. I was invited by a couple companies that wanted still to pay for my travel and have me go there, but I didn't know if I'd be allowed back in the U.S. I don't know how that's working right now. So I said, you know what, I better not. They even figured out how I could get there. We'll fly from New York to Europe and then here or whatever. And I'm like, you know, I'd love to come, but the U.S. might not let me back in if I've been in China at this point. And they should, because the coronavirus has really been nearly completely suppressed there. So if anything, they should be worried about me going there at this point. But I digress. A lot of cool things are happening out there in Beijing now at the motor show. Besides this flying KiwiGoGo, XPeng also announced that they're going to be giving 3,000 kilowatt hours of free charging to their customers. I think it's per year for 3 years. So that's pretty cool. You know, I mean, if it's 3,000 kilowatt hours per year, that's probably good for somewhere around 10 to 12,000 miles of driving per year, and that comes with the new XPeng vehicles for 3 years. So that's pretty good perk. It's kind of similar to what we see here with all these car companies announcing that they're going to do, you know, Electrify America, 3 years or 2 years or 1 year of unlimited charging. Volkswagen just announced that with the ID4. You're going to get 3 years of unlimited charging on the Electrify America network. So, you know, the XPeng's doing it over there also. They also introduced a battery leasing program. I don't have all the details for it, but basically they're separating the cost of the battery from the car and allowing you to lease it separately. Now, it's different than like the Renault Zoe, where the battery like was could be removed from the vehicle, or, you know, it was, they would take it out, replace it, and give you a new one. That's not the case with XPeng. They're just doing this to make it financially easier for customers to buy the XPengs. So you could like buy the car outright, but not pay for the battery, and then lease the battery, like a 3 year lease or 5 year lease. I think they purchased the vehicles a little bit differently than we do here, because I don't understand why they would just roll that price into your lease price on your car. So they must have different financial terms in China for most buyers. But those are the big news from China for XPeng, at least.
Well, they also got a new factory though, right?
Forgot about that.
Which is kind of
big news. Yeah. So they're headquartered in Guangzhou, but they've just built a brand new state of the art factory in Zhaoqing or Zhaoqing, and that. How do you pronounce that, Tom? Do you know?
I have no idea.
Yeah. So anyway, I thought you were cutting in there and telling me. But that's their new state-of-the-art factory, just opened like 2 or 3 months ago. And now they just announced that in partnership with the city of Guangzhou, they are going to be building a new $4 billion factory in Guangzhou, where their company headquarters is. So, you know, things are happening really at a breakneck pace for XPeng. They just did a public IPO here in the New York Stock Exchange. They have their second vehicle out, the P7, that, from what I understand, is selling really well. I had the opportunity to drive it a few weeks ago, one of only three people in the U.S. to actually drive that vehicle. And it was, you know, performed very well. It's a compelling vehicle. That brings us to the other news in China about all these other new cars that are being announced at the Beijing Motor Show. And without going into each one into detail, the one thing that I want to say is I've studied the Chinese auto market for a while now. I've been visited there. I got to see the vehicles. I've gotten to drive Nios and other Chinese cars. And if people think that Chinese cars are still this like sub, you know, quality that, you know, is less than what is available on the rest of the world, you are woefully wrong. Now, they're not 100% of the way. They're not all of the companies. Right. But what has happened in the last 4 or 5 years with quality-wise with Chinese cars, they are world competitors now. And this decade, by the end of this decade, China is going to be an automotive powerhouse like Europe is, like the US is, like Japan is, like Korea is now. So no more Chinese junk cars that, you know, they're just copying other people and using old technology. They went out and hired designers. We talked about this before. They hired designers from the existing companies, engineers. Some Chinese companies took whole engineering teams from existing OEMs, and they are producing vehicles now that are world class. China is here in the automotive world.
Right. So let's take a look at some of these real quick then. So Honda is also there, and they showed off the SUV e-concept. It's a two-door crossover with a shark-like snout, and I don't mean that in a flattering way, really. Apparently, it's an indication of an all-new electric crossover SUV, a mass production model for China. It's kind of hard to judge what a production model might look like based on this, because, you know, it'll have four doors and, you know, it should be like substantially different. And we don't have any specs, so I don't know. Tom, is there anything you like here?
Oh, the side profile looks like a Neo ES8 to me.
Okay.
Particularly the front, the nose. So yeah, I, you know, it's interesting vehicle. It's the type of vehicle that people are looking for these days. It's that crossover. I just like the fact that Honda is talking about EVs.
Yeah.
So, you know, we can't get them to give us one here in the US, but I guess eventually they're going to have to.
Yeah. Something about this car doesn't, I don't know, doesn't come together for me. Kyle, you have a quick thought about this?
Not particularly. Okay.
We can move on. That's yeah. Fine. We have more. So this next one's a little more interesting to me. It's still very concept-y with butterfly doors back and front and huge wheels, but it's a Buick, which was General Motors' bread and butter brand in China. It also revised the Electra nameplate, which is pretty cool. Some of these original Electras were quite handsome back in the day. If this is previewing a future model, it's safe to say that it won't look like this exactly. I've actually seen an electric Buick crossover during GM's EV Battery Day earlier this year. And while the details of that particular vehicle are a little fuzzy in my mind, I'm pretty sure it didn't look anything like that. But in any event, the Electra would supposedly offer more than 600 kilometers of range. That's 372 miles. And would zip up to 100 kilometers per hour at 62 miles an hour in 4.3 seconds, which is good. Yeah, it's really good, actually. If it's made, it would, of course, use an Ultium battery and powertrain components. Kyle, does the name Electra speak to you, or does it just conjure up boat-sized executive coupes from the 70s?
Right. Yeah, well, that's way before my time. But what I do think will be really great is those Buick, for our U.S. audience, you'll know what I'm talking about. The Buick commercials would finally be accurate because they have run these commercials where, you know, you're pulling up in a Buick to pick up your friend from the bar or wherever, and you're like, I'm right outside. I'm in the Buick. And they're like, where? I don't see a Buick. They're standing in front of it, obviously. And, you know, it's supposed to be like, oh, they've changed their company. Meanwhile, it looks just like every other Buick. But this one would actually be accurate. You could pull outside, be like, where are you? I'm in the Buick. I do not see one. I don't see a Buick here. There is nothing going off of brand legacy or heritage speaking to anything that they've ever accomplished in the past, other than making floaty boaty cars for our older generation to move around in. This is a radical change from anything they're doing. It's a radical change from anything GM has ever done. And look, I'm just excited for that. Yeah. I think it's great. Someone finally realized we have nothing of value in the Buick brand. Start fresh and do something interesting. And here you go. And oh, by the way, Buick is huge in China. Yeah. So this is a big move. Just from a brand perspective looking forwards, I think it could be the future of Buick.
Nice, Tom. Yeah.
Well, I'm just happy that they brought back the Electra name. I've been waiting for that. It's one of those names like that, you know, is iconic for Buick for many years. And it was like, that's going to be whenever Buick does make an electric car, their first electric car, it's got to be called the Electra, you know, and So I've been waiting for this. It's a cool looking car. It's a cool looking concept. If this does come to market eventually, it's not going to be anything like that. So it's hard to get too excited about something that, you know, it's like enough with the concepts. We want to drive our EVs now.
Yeah.
But I'm glad it looks like they're bringing back the Electra name. That's what I take out of this.
Right. Right on. And hopefully it'll come to the US too. So next up, we have the Voya i3 electric SUV concept. Voya is the luxury division of the Chinese state-owned Dongfeng Motor Corporation. Now, speaking of design, this one's got some really interesting features. The air comes up through the grill area, which is textured with like a large scallop diamond shapes. And it comes up through the hood where that texture continues. It's kind of a striking thing going on. I can't tell exactly how well it works because I can't see it in person, but... anyway, it's definitely worth taking a look at. There's no technical details yet, but apparently some version of this will go on sale in China next year. So it could look, I don't know how close to this could possibly look. Tom, do you care for this or is it a bit much?
It's a bit much. And when I see the front, even though it's an SUV, when I see the grill, it reminds me of the Fisker Karma, like Cheshire cat grin a little bit. You know, even though I know it's much taller up because it's an SUV, but that's what I see initially when I see that. I see the Fisker Karma a little bit in the front.
What, can we see the back end there?
Yes, one second. Sorry. Pulling it up. There we go. Can we just say someone at this company must be blind because this is awful. Oh, yeah? It's really bad. Like, not even close to being good. Who in their right mind would want to drive this dinosaur-looking thing going down the road with crazy textured stuff everywhere? Like, what is going on here? This is... I don't understand it. This is so bad. From everything Volvo is doing so well, that's all you need to do to make a great-looking car. Just copy a Volvo. Don't do this. This is so bad.
I could see like birds getting sucked in that grill in the front as you're driving down the road.
Well, anyway, just come up over your windshield because, you know,
it's, no, they'll go in like those holes in the front that they won't, that those giant holes, like,
it's just going to gobble up children that you're driving over. It looks really bad. And like, I wouldn't even like imagine what people must think about you to drive through a quaint small town in this thing. Like, it's, oh, all right, yeah. Let's move on to the next, because this is okay. Just out of the world terrible.
So the Beijing Radiance concept is a pretty slick-looking design, I thought. It's a sedan with 800 kilometers of NEDC range. That would be 497 miles in freedom units.
freedom units, I love it.
but in reality, it would probably get far less because the NEDC is tested super optimistic. But not a lot of detail here either. But, you know, it looks pretty good. It's pretty slippery looking. I don't know. What do you think? I like the logo, actually, at the back, the B and the E. They're kind of like opposites.
It's very Bugatti-esque back there. Right. The B and the E. I like it. It looks just like a Lucid Air concept.
You know those wheels? So they have, it looks like the same as the Audi e-tron aero wheels or something, don't they?
Yeah, but I think there's only so much you can really do with wheels. It's kind of iPace-esque, these wheels as well.
Reminds me of the i8 wheels, the BMW i8 wheels. One of their versions looks similar to that.
Okay.
And the shape of this car reminds me of that. Remember that Mercedes concept car that came out a few years ago with the coach doors also, that was like a self-driving, was a lounge. The seats were facing each other inside. It reminds me of that a little bit.
Was it like the one with the omnidirectional wheels? Like, it kind of goes sideways or anything? That thing? Or
I don't think the one I'm talking about goes sideways, no.
Right. Okay, different one. Okay, well, so the Neta Eureka 03 concept is a funky-looking thing, especially in profile. Let's see. It's got a similar range figures as that last car, about 800 kilometers or 900 or 496 miles on the NEDC, so, you know, less than that. Both say 325, I'm guessing. I don't know. But it's got a 4-second 0 to 100 kilometers per hour time, which is respectable. Those headlights are kind of super exaggerated Thor hammer Volvo type looking things. And also there's a neat flying buttress element to the seat pillar in the back there. It's reportedly coming to Chinese roads in 2020. And I think this might be closer to the Model 3. Kyle, do you like this as much as the Model 3, or is this too much going on here?
No, Eureka. I'd look at the headlights. That's all I want to say. What is going on up here? What, I don't really understand the Chinese concept car market, and Tom probably does more than any of us, because he spent a lot of time in China understanding the culture, understanding their market, and also these cars. But I've never heard of any of these, and they're all ugly. So they don't do anything for me. I mean, that's my personal opinion. I can't wait till we see some production ones. But like, is this attractive to people in China? Because to me, I wouldn't want to be within 20 feet of this. I feel like I'd catch a disease.
Well, you know, one thing that I do notice is a lot of the cars that seem like they're going to be designed just for the Chinese market, like this might be one of them, have more radical designs than the automakers that are trying to make a world brand, you know, and be a global manufacturer. They're the ones that bring in, I think, designers from other countries and other existing OEMs. And so they kind of tone down the styling. Like, you know, we talked before about Polestar, you know, having the designer, you know, from Volvo. So, you know, but some of these, and there's a million Chinese car companies. Your head spins when you walk around these shows. It's not like when we go to the car shows here in the U.S. where you see Ford, Mercedes, Nissan, all the names you know. It's just one after another after another after another that, you know, have some of them have these crazy wild designs. Many of them never even come to market. So, you know, the Chinese market is still, you know, the auto market is still, you know, up and coming. And there's a lot of newcomers trying to make huge splashes with these wild designs. But you don't really see them on the roads in China, like these crazy wild designs. So I think a lot of these cars that we're looking at now that have these like far out design language are just concepts. And if that type of vehicle ever does come to market, it's not going to be quite as wild. Now, this last one that we looked at isn't that wild other than the headlights. You know, I mean, it's not that crazy. And I don't recall seeing anything that, you know, stunning on the roads in China. They're mostly just, you know, regular cars and with Asian design language built into it, which is a little bit different than what we have in Europe and the US, but nothing that wild and far out.
Yeah, right. That car wasn't that wild, but it was that ugly. But the next one, one I'm very excited about because this is one of my favorite automakers from China. Dominic, please introduce.
Sure. Okay, so finally we have the Aura Futurist. Now, Aura is the electric brand of Great Wall, which has a reputation for, say, copying some designs in the past. But the Futurist, it's probably one of my favorite cars here. It's not as sleek as most of the others, but it's got all these retro cues that I just love. It's actual non-body colored bumpers for starters. And I love everything about this. The wheels, the mint color paint, the lack of a beep pillar, the glass roof. Inside, the retro from the future theme kind of continues. It's got a screen in there, but there's lots of other styling cues that could be from the 50s. It's supposedly a near production prototype. So there will be changes, of course. But the original view, you know, it kind of puts me in mind of a Soviet something. Someone was saying it had like a Mach-E thing going on with the front, but you know, like when I look at the front three quarters and down the side, I can't even quite think. Not like a Lada, but
well, it's kind of like a Lada got rear-ended by a Mustang and it just kind of squished into the shell.
Yeah,
I think it looks great. I love this car. I would drive this every day, everywhere. I don't care if they copy stuff. This is cool, and I love the color. I would want it in this exact spec. That's awesome.
Yeah,
I agree. I just wonder if that'll translate to the Chinese market like it would in the U.S. You know, because they don't have that history of automobiles. I mean, this is the first generation of Chinese people that owned cars. Other than the very wealthy, you know, it's for the first time, you know, the quote-unquote middle class in China are buying and driving cars. So they don't have that affinity with the past like we do. You know, their grandfather didn't drive something that looks like this. You know, like, so, you know, that I wonder how well that's going to do there. But I'd love it too. I think that thing's so cool. I would definitely drive one of these.
Yeah, when I was saying this is the car I was really excited about, I actually didn't think this one was next, but am very much excited about this car. And I really think they hit it out of the park with the design. We'll see what the specs are if it ever makes it to production, but that's a nice car.
Right. That was my fault. I skipped over one by mistake.
So skipped over the best one.
Let's back up to that. Okay, so tell me if I'm pronouncing this wrong, if you know, but the Hongqi has been around for a while. It is honky. Okay.
Honky.
Yeah. Same.
This is like the Rolls Royce of China. No joke. Right. This is like what the president rolls around in. These things are nice.
Right. It's basically, they've been making like, I think they're kind of obnoxious looking limousines for Chinese government officials for years now. And what's this? The E-HS9. It looks very honky with that big, with that big noxious grill on the front, but it's an SUV now and apparently electric, and it's going to be like six figures, they say. And it looks,
it's going to be an exorbitant amount of money. This is a Rolls-Royce competitor, Rolls-Royce Cullinan competitor for China. The thing I love about it is this amazingly huge crystal shifter. Look at this thing. Oh. That is crazy. It's so weird. And I love these cars because it's so like they haven't driven anyone else's cars. It's very much unique designs, unique styling cues that's carried through for the past 50 years of making these things. And the fact that now it's in SUV form just makes it even better because you can drive over stuff in like your old Chinese, new Chinese car. I think it's so cool. And I hope one day I get the opportunity to drive the big limo and then this SUV.
Right. Yeah, right on. Oh, yeah, those old limos look pretty cool, actually.
Yes. Kind of reminds me of a Lincoln from that front view, doesn't it? Like a Lincoln Aviator or something like that to me.
Yeah, I mean, kind of like someone described an Aviator over the phone, and then that's what they ended up with.
All right. Hey, I understand the Ford Mustang Mach-E actually made an appearance at this Beijing Motor Show, Tom. Can you tell us anything about that?
Yeah, so we don't know. I mean, not more than to say they introduced it and it's going to be for sale there. They're, you know, the Mach-E is going to go on sale in China. And, you know, the people that are Ford of China is working on a plan now on seeing how it fits into the market there. And which is good news. You know, I, to be honest with you, I wasn't aware that Ford was bringing this to China, and maybe we reported on it and I just missed it. But good on Ford. You know, it's going to be a real world car. It's got stiff competition over in China. You know, Model Y has been well received. It, you know, is there, people are waiting for the Model Y. The also the Link & Co. I don't know if you saw, we did that post. Right. We talked about it last week. That's kind of like right in the wheelhouse of this vehicle, that zero concept that's coming to market. And the ID4 is going to be direct competition for the Mustang. And the problem that one of the problems they have over there is like in Europe and the US, the Mustang name is so iconic. You know, it people will look at it just because it's a Mustang. You know, they might not buy it, but it'll get it a look. And people might consider it. I don't know if that translates over in China. I don't know how much cachet that the Mustang name carries. It could just be another, you know, it certainly doesn't have the prestige of a Honky.
To be clear, nothing does.
Yeah, exactly. So you know, that's what I'm concerned about, is how will the general public view this car. Like they certainly aren't going to look at it like we do in US and Europe. But I mean, it's got to make it or break on its own performance, you know, on does it deliver the range, the driving experience, right, for the price that the price point that the competition does. And it's tough competition for this vehicle over in China.
Yeah, this could be interesting. This could be like a really breakthrough vehicle for Ford in China, because I don't know if China's really been as big for Ford as it has been for like for GM with Buick and things. But you know, the Mach-E's got its own sort of style and performance sort of package. It's, you know, it's kind of like the Model Y, but it's, you know, you can it's a very separate kind of thing. And you know, so it'd be interesting if it could help the Ford brand name all, you know, overall over there. But speaking of the Mach-E, this week we actually saw it get as much as $3,000 chopped off its price tag, depending on the trim level. That's except for the fast GT version, that price stays the same. It basically breaks down like this: $3,000 less for all premium trim models, $2,000 less for all California Route 1 models, and $1,000 less for all select and first edition models. That's pretty great savings. And I don't know if it really needed the help, but this will, you know, most likely help move even some more electric metal.
So I was going to say, I want to know both of your opinions on why this happened now.
ID4.
Yeah.
That's my opinion.
Yeah. That's what I was talking to a couple friends about, and they both said definitely it's a response to the ID, because it happened right after, you know, we get all the initial pricing for the ID4.
Like 2 days after,
right? And the ID4, you know, is right in this wheelhouse. Yes, they're different. I mean, they're the same type of vehicle, but they had served different purposes. I'm I I'm not 100% convinced of that. I think it's possible. But I also think that there's a possibility that this was planned all along with Ford.
They've been doing it the whole way.
That's it, Kyle. You just said it. What Ford has been doing from the beginning of the when they first announced this is they just keep making the vehicle better. They keep right. giving us more. They keep giving. So here we are right before the launch. What's better than saying, hey, and by the way, $3,000 less. So, you know, I'm not completely convinced that this was driven as a response to the ID.4. I think that's the easy answer. That's to say, oh, well, you know, Volkswagen came out.
It certainly didn't hurt the timing.
It didn't hurt the timing, but I give Ford more credit. And I'll because I just love everything they've done with this car.
Agreed.
I love the vehicle. I love the marketing. I love how they got the press involved, how they brought Bill Ford out to introduce it and had the whole lineup of Mustangs. They pushed all their chips in on this vehicle, Ford. So I don't think that they would make such a quick reactionary decision like, oh, shit, the ID.4 costs less. We got to chop the price. I give Ford more credit. I think that this has been planned all along.
I tend to agree with that. Look, we've seen it from acceleration. We've seen it from features. We've seen it from everything here. Mach-E GT is what now? The same exact acceleration rate as Model Y. It keeps getting better and better. Ford was really cool. You know, I went over there and drove it in the simulator at their virtual vehicle development facility here in North Carolina. They've been, you're absolutely right. They even held back in there and they're like, here's the good one. And then let me show you kind of like what we're working on. Mm-hmm. And it was like, whoa. So that's absolutely correct. Does it make a difference? I don't know if we'll see increased sales, but I will say people had already ordered this car through their dealers and now are saying, oh, hey, by the way, you don't have to spend $3,000. I mean, it's really a last minute right before delivery start. No one's going to be upset about this. That's just like a giant birthday present for everyone who's ordered one.
And Kyle, here in New Jersey, it makes a huge difference because you can load up the Mach-E to break the $55,000 threshold for the state rebate. So now that can make the difference between it's an $8,000 savings. You know, you get the $5,000 rebate and the $3,000. That will make the difference between selling the car and not selling the car. You know, so, you know, I'm not saying that, certainly not saying they did it in a reaction to New Jersey, but it definitely makes a difference here. I'm sure the dealers in New Jersey are going to be super happy when they get this news. Well, they got it already, but when they digest it.
Right on. Well, I hope they didn't lower it because of the ID.4, because I think it's really a separate vehicle and it stands on its own. And I think it would have competed okay against the ID.4 at the original price. But yeah, $3,000, you can't really argue with that. That's like, and
talking about the ID.4, I drove one yesterday.
Ooh. Why are you telling us this now?
Because I can't talk about it.
Oh.
Well, then why'd you bring it up?
just to make you a little jealous.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, well, I love the ID.4. They've done, yeah, such a great job on that car from a design and cost perspective. I'm very excited about it.
Volkswagen is going to sell hundreds of thousands of them every year.
Well, that sounds totally like agree. A great That sounds like a pretty positive impression. Okay, well, we're kind of almost out of time. So really quickly, I just want to touch on this other little vehicle that popped up. I don't know if it's, I don't think it was shown at China, but they sort of presented, you know, they talked about it there. And that's the RM20E, which is short for the electrified RM20E racing midship sports car prototype. That was produced, it's a Hyundai, basically it's a Hyundai Veloster in black and white. And I believe Rimac Automobili is helping them develop this thing. It's a race car. And maybe hopefully bound eventually for an electric touring car series. It's got a 60 kilowatt hour pack. It uses liquid flooded battery module technology. So, you know, amongst all the cells, they're all floating around in a dielectric fluid. Which is a cooling strategy that I guess, Rimac probably has a hand in. And we could end up, it's kind of curious, interesting to me, because that could end up in other Hyundai products, or Porsche also has an ownership stake in Rimac. So, you know, Porsche could be looking at that sort of thing. And speaking of Rimac, they may be buying Bugatti, which is kind of a big power move. you know, so we could see this sort of electric technology ending up in like a like the premium, most premium of brands. Yeah. So, but just back to this thing real quick. So it's got four motors, but they're midship, or they're ahead of the rear axle a bit. So
that's cool.
And they're all, and it just powers the rear, it just powers the rear axle as well. I don't think it's an all-wheel drive. It puts out 810 horsepower and 708 pound-feet of torque. Less than 3 seconds, 0 to 100 kilometers an hour. 0 to 200 kilometers an hour, or 124 miles an hour. 124 miles an hour is under 10 seconds. Top speed is over 155. So, you know, pretty lethal track weapon, I would say.
Yes, yeah. Please bring it to us. We want to test this.
Yeah. Yeah, this is definitely not going to be sold in dealers, but
right.
It would be nice if they could find a way of bringing it over to the U.S.
Basically, if it arrives on our doorstep randomly by some way, they will not have a lack of content from us on this car.
Right. So moving along real quick. So while Mustang is getting a price decrease, if you have a Model Y, not the performance Model Y, but just like a long range Model Y, you can pay $2,000 extra and get a little acceleration boost. It shaves off like half a second off the 0 to 60. Any number, yeah. Anything on this, Tom or Kyle?
I love that Tesla's offering this. It's just it's just too much in my opinion. You know, I have the Model 3 dual motor long range, and it's also available on the Model 3. But if it was more reasonable, I'd go for it. I still think I would love if they could do a temporary power boost. Like I'm sure they could. Like I'd pay $100 for them to give it to me for 24 hours. You know, I wish you could order it through the app and get the power boost like on a day where I'm going driving. You know what I mean? But I don't need it all the time. I don't need to spend $2,000 for it all the time. Don't you think that would make money for them? Don't you think that'd be a cool option? Like you can order it on the app. It takes effect like within 15 minutes or whatever. And it expires in 24 hours. If they can give you the power, they can take it away. So
It would be just as easy for them. That brings up an interesting model though as well for the enhanced and full self-driving options too. If we start to see short-term subscriptions to this, there's no reason why they couldn't do it for the performance boost. The performance boost to me has no real benefit other than like it goes a little bit faster. But in electric cars, you always calibrate to the speed of the car. So if I'm driving around a bicycle and I get in my electric smart car, it feels really fast. And then if I go from my electric smart car to the i3, that feels really fast. But then you just get used to it. It doesn't matter. There's no noise. So it's like, I had a P100D for a year. That felt slow after about a week of owning it because it's always like, oh, well, it was faster when it was warm before. So I don't see the benefit of spending a lot of money to make EVs accelerate faster. What I do see the benefit of, though, is give the people track mode on a subscription basis, for especially for rear-wheel drive Model 3, but also for dual motor. It's so easy for them to do. They would be able to make so much money from performance EV enthusiasts who own Model 3, which, by the way, there are many of them who would love to pay $500, $1,000 for track mode on their cars.
Sure. Yeah, somebody needs to tweet that at Elon and let's get something happening here. Okay, well, that brings us to the end of our show. We've gone a little over our time, but thank you all for joining us. If you have any comments about any of the topics on today's show, you can comment on the Inside EVs podcast post, the YouTube comment section below, or on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread. Don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Tom is at Tomalog. Kyle is at Out of Spec, and I am at Dominic_Y. Click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications, and we'll see you all next week. Ciao.